It's time for our local foods conversation on the Wednesday morning show. And Mark Schultz is our guest today. He and his wife Peggy own Backwood Basics in Bemidji. Mark is an inventor, businessman, writer, innovator, former Peace Corps volunteer, and a gardener. He's one of the presenters at this year's Back to Basics workshop at Pine River Backus School on January 27th. Mark, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Your workshop at Back to Basics is about raised beds and container gardening. What are some of the advantages of planting in containers or raised beds instead of in the ground?
The first thing is you have complete control over the soil that goes into the planters. You can really boost your productivity if you have a planter that has a good quality compost-based mix. And if you're growing in the ground, it's just a lot harder to control the quality of the soil. The other advantages are that it's easy to water them. They take a lot less water. Of course, a container, if it's self-watering, all the water stays captive, so the roots take it all up. Nothing is wasted. They use about 20% of the water of a conventional garden. Hmm. With a raised bed, of course, you have leaks in the bottom. There's no bottom, so that the water does drain out. But if you have a good quality organic-based potting mix, it holds the moisture a lot better than in the ground. There's a lot less pest control because you're raising in a raised bed or a container. There's no weeding, no tilling, no cultivation. They're a lot easier to tend and maintain, and I think they're just attractive. The biggest advantage, especially to container gardening, is that it allows anybody with a level surface in the sun to have a garden. So the urban gardener, anybody with a patio, a deck, a driveway, sidewalk, even a rooftop can now have a garden.
And, you know, I have put plants in containers, flower pots, things like that outside. And then, of course, over the summer, it gets hot. I don't necessarily get water to them, and they suffer. And you have invented a system to help take care of the water. Tell us about that.
Great. We call it the garden stream. And this is about 4 years in the making. We started out using earth boxes. You know, we went up through the ranks of conventional gardening and had about 2,400 square feet of tilled garden, and it got to be way too much work. So we started getting ads in the mail for these self-watering planters, earth boxes. It just sounded great. It was no watering, no tilling, no weeding, and it sounded too good to be true. So I ordered 100 of them, and at $35 a piece wholesale, it was something... It helps in my business. It always helps to have a bookkeeper with a sense of humor. But, you know, eventually we sold about 80% of them. But what they didn't tell you in the glossy ads was that two mature tomato plants use well over 4 gallons of water in a day. And so we'd be out in the boat and come back in the afternoon, and our tomato plants would be lying flat. Mm-hmm. So we'd have to go around. I had about 20 of these earth boxes planted at that time, so I'd go around like filling a gas tank with the hose and just kept filling them every day. And I thought, well, this is getting old too. So we came up with a way to use a mini float valve in a chamber that connects by hose to these planters. You can retrofit earth boxes, or you can make your own out of 5 gallon buckets just using the insert that we came up with. And it allows you to walk away from your garden for the entire growing season if you want to, if you have a reliable water supply. So that's the big advantage, is it's hands-free gardening.
And you brought a sample of your invention. This is like one of your many inventions. You invented the 2x4 canoe and wrote a book about it. You've sold kitchen supplies. You've had Pasties Plus in the past. And now you have all of this information about gardening and plants, which you've always been into, too, I know.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering, are there certain plants that do better in containers than others?
Yeah, there are. That's why the combination of containers and raised beds is such a good relationship, because plants like tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, basil, herbs, those plants do really well in containers. And then the other advantage of containers, you can move them. We have two hoop houses, but actually it's my own design that we designed 12 by 24 hoop houses, and we grow all of our heat-loving crops in the hoop houses, so they grow really well in containers. Plants like all the root crops, the carrots, onions, beets, all of that we put in our raised beds, along with the other plants that take up a lot of space, the squash and, and Swiss chard, those types of things do better in raised beds. Mm. So it's a great relationship where you can do both.
How deep is how deep is the appropriate raised bed? I mean, I didn't think about carrots in a raised bed.
Well, that's kind of up for debate, because some people think a raised bed should be high, because then it allows you to put your garden up at a more comfortable height. Ours are only 8 inches, which means you still have to bend over to work on them, but we have a ledge around the top of them, so you can actually sit on them and put your beverage appropriate for the time of day on them and stuff. So 8 inches is in a 4x8 bed, an 8-inch deep raised bed is 21 cubic feet of potting mix, of material. So if you think you need a higher bed than that, I think you'd better think about it, because that's 8/10 of a cubic yard of material. So yeah, they hold a lot.
What kind of soil do you put in there?
Well, I like to say that our garden runs on leaves. We compost all of our leaves that we can handle in our yard. And we use, for our containers, we use a half commercial potting mix and half compost made from our chopped leaves. And then we take that spent potting mix that's filled with roots at the end of the growing season, and we let those decompose in a static pile for a year. And then that material goes into our raised beds. And then we augment that with more chopped leaves that we put on top of the raised beds in the fall, and then we till those in the spring. And by the time it's time to plant, they're generally very productive. They're just filled with earthworms and really productive. So we really like our leaves.
That is Mark Schultz, and we are learning about container gardening this morning. For those of us who have houseplants, we know that they tend to have roots that grow around and get all root-bound. What is the story on this?
Well, there's something called air pruning, which most people, when they're growing in containers, to prevent the roots from just hitting an impervious surface, a hard surface, they think they're still growing in a straight line, and they'll just keep circling and circling. And what we do is we put something we call a circling stopper, which is basically just an angled piece of corner bead that people use for drywall. Mm-hmm. They're like $1.25 for an 8-foot section. And we put small pieces of that on each side of our containers. And when the roots hit that, it's a barrier and they won't keep circling, but it also has air in it and perforations. So the terminal ends of the roots will dry out. They'll start to dehydrate and they'll start branching. And that branching just fills the whole planter with fibrous roots. So the roots are really utilizing the potting mix. They're finding all those nutrients and water, and they're maximizing the efficiency of it. So some people, they'll drill a bunch of holes in their container, and then they'll put a grow bag in there, and then put their potting mix and plant in there, and they get air pruning that way. We found our little 5-cent a piece circling stoppers do the same thing and much more inexpensively.
I saw on your Facebook page that you have a special way of building raised beds. Tell us about that.
The first raised bed I ever saw was in 1983. A friend of mine and I were in Peace Corps. We were in Central African Republic, and we went on vacation. We went to Gabon, and we went to a restaurant owned by an African who raised most of his own food. And outside, he had about a dozen raised beds. And it was my first time I'd ever seen a raised bed, and he called it the French intensive system. In his raised beds, his border material was inverted beer bottles.
That's
and this
nice.
Was like typical African appropriate technology. He used what he had available to him to make these borders. And we were asking him, and he said, you know, you can improve the quality of the soil. And the real benefit there became apparent when we were there. There was a downpour, just poured, and all the ground around the raised beds flooded. But the raised beds stayed nice and high and dry. So I liked the idea, but we came up with a lot of different border materials and weren't really happy with any of them. And we decided on corrugated metal, just cutting strips of corrugated roofing metal and then bordering them with 2x4, just plain 2x4s painted. We came up with a very durable, attractive raised bed that you can build a 4x8 one for about $35.
Well, how do you cut that metal?
I use a metal cutting blade on an angle grinder. The angle grinder is probably one of the best pieces of equipment I ever purchased. It was like $19, and I have cut thousands of feet of metal with this thing, and it makes it real easy to cut this. You can use other materials. You can use a metal cutting blade on a reciprocating saw or something like that, but it's nowhere near as quick and easy as a angle grinder. It works really well.
Yeah, how many of these raised beds are at your place?
Oh, let's see. I think we have about half a dozen or so right now. So that's the nice thing. As the garden expands, they're so easy to make that you can just keep adding one or two every year as your garden grows.
And you just have paths in between and...
Yep. Yep. Just we just have a mulched pathway between the beds. So they have about 3 feet of walking space between them. So they're real easy to work with. It's really nice. You can lean over, you can access from either side. And
well, so you did recently launch your new website and your blog. Tell us what you're up to right now.
Well, we're ready to market the Garden Stream system here soon. We're still working with some marketers and trying to figure out the best way to do that. We will have them available at Back to Basics. We're going to have a vendor's booth there. Along with me doing a presentation, we'll have the booth available. So we'll have these kits available for sale there. Mm-hmm. We're probably not going to get them out nationwide here until we get a little more direction from some professionals on how to do that. But the other thing about our website and our business is that we came up with a lot of ideas to do a lot of things. We have a composter that runs off a windshield wiper motor and uses bicycle sprockets and is automatic. It's on a timer, so it turns 5 minutes a day, twice a day. It turns compost, chopped leaves and coffee grounds are a great combination. And we can have a good usable compost in about, 4 to 6 weeks with these automatic composters. I actually have one going in the garage right now. I have it in an insulated box, and it's just heated with a light bulb. When it gets 30 below, it doesn't quite work. But for the most part, we're making compost year-round.
Four to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Huh. We have three of those going right now, or not right now, but online. And I have two more sitting in the workshop that could be put into production.
So do you have a leaf rake or something that you pick up leaves with to use?
We just bought a $250 mulching walk behind self-propelled lawnmower with a rear bagger. They're the best leaf chopper out there. And you just run over the leaves in your yard and fill the bagger and dump them into your composter or just pour them on top of your raised bed or bag them up and use them the following season. But just a regular old lawnmower does a great job of chopping leaves.
What about grass? If you get grass,
yeah, grass
in there?
Clippings are great. We use we augment the grass clippings in the summer if the composter needs a little boost. Throwing freshly cut green grass clippings in there. The next morning when you open it up, your glasses will steam up. It'll be about 150 degrees in there.
Whoa!
So they're a great nitrogen source.
It's hot.
Grass is hot.
Yeah.
Grass, coffee, and leaves.
That's pretty much. And then table scraps. We put our food scraps from the house in there, but they're a pretty minor part of it.
Okay.
That's mostly just to feel good about it. But primarily it's the leaves and the coffee grounds. Coffee grounds are super. And if you have a supply, if you have a coffee shop or you go and just bring a nice clean 5 gallon bucket and ask them if they'll fill it up for you and come back every week and replace it. They make a great nitrogen supply for your composter. And coffee grounds have, besides the nitrogen, they're a good source of magnesium and calcium and phosphorus and potassium. They're brown, but they're considered a green.
Have you heard of pouring your old coffee in a plant? Is that good or bad?
I wouldn't pour my coffee in the plants because the coffee itself is acidic.
Okay.
But the coffee grounds aren't. You'd think they would be, but they're pretty neutral pH. The acids have been leached out during the brewing process. Mm-hmm. So the grounds are not acidic, but coffee itself is. And unless it's an acid-loving plant, I don't know that I'd do that.
Good to know.
We're talking with Mark Schultz from Backwood Basics. His website is backwoodbasics.com. And also on your blog, you have some recipes right now.
Oh, yeah.
And I am fascinated by some of the things you have so far on your website. What are some of those recipes we can find there?
Well, I had written those last year when we still owned Turtle River Pasties building. We wanted to put it to use, so we had some classes. We had classes on how to make Turtle River Pasties at home and a pizza recipe that I came up with, and then breads, how to make breads. So we did some of those classes, but we don't do those anymore. So I just thought, well, middle of the winter, I can't be out filming and doing things on how to build hoop houses and that kind of thing. But I can just throw these recipes on the blog site just to have something out there.
They look pretty good. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you plan to cover in your workshop that we might have missed?
Mainly it's about that great relationship between raised beds and containers that allows anybody with a level surface in the sun to have a garden. So that's kind of our goal, our mission, is to allow people who didn't think they could have a garden to have a garden. So these containers, they allow anybody with people in assisted living, students in schools, urban growers, incarcerated people. It allows anybody to experience the thrill of having a garden, even if they don't have a plot of ground to have one in.
And with your use of water, you use water so, what's the word?
Efficiently.
Yes.
Right.
that you don't need to have a faucet necessarily to turn on the way you design things.
Right, yeah. Gravity flow is probably the best. It's the safest way to go. If you have a reliable source, a rain barrel is ideal.
Yeah.
And in our hoop houses, all of our containers are fed by rain barrels. And there's no better water for plants than rain. They do use it so efficiently. Like if you're gardening on a rooftop and you have a container, just a tub, 20-gallon tub, you can hook that up to your planters and you can go several days without having to water them.
Isn't that great?
Just a regular old storage bin, like
right,
you put your Christmas decorations in or
right.
something.
Yep, bin them like $4 or $5 a piece, and they make a great container. If you're growing tomatoes or pole beans or something like that, you might have to fill them every 3 or 4 days.
That's Mark Schultz from Backwood Basics. He's one of the presenters at this year's Back to Basics workshop in Pine River. It's held Saturday, January 27th at Pine River Backus School, and the theme this year is Navigating Changing Currents. You can call us for more information, 800-662-5799, or check out happydancingturtle.org. And you can catch up on our local food and growing stories on our website at kaxc.org. We have last week's visit with Kathy Connell about seed saving there. And then next week at this time, we're going to be talking with Philip Hunsaker and Mike Duvall. And they're the keynote speakers for this year's Back to Basics workshop. And the theme, of course, is Navigating Changing Currents, and they work for the Minnesota DNR's Division of Ecological and Water Resources. Phil's an aquatic invasive species prevention planner, and Mike is district manager. And they are also friends who share a passion for water, music, and pie. And their keynote address is going to be about what Minnesotans need to know and what we can do about environmental challenges like climate change and aquatic invasive species.